Hello, this is Jeff Gaudiosi, and you're on MisplacedStraws.com, where music comes to life. My guest today is one of those people that just personifies New York City. He recently released his third full-length record with his band, The Compulsions, aptly titled Ferocious. The musicians on the record have played with names like Guns N' Roses, David Bowie, Sons of Apollo, Raging Slab, and much more. Please welcome Rob Carlisle. Welcome, Rob.
Thank you for having me, man. That's quite an introduction.
My pleasure. And I mean, where to start with all this? But I mentioned Ferocious, your third full record, but your first since 2015's Dirty Fun. Originally, you had a steady lineup of the band with Richard Fortus and Frank Farrar of Guns N' Roses and Sammy Yaffa of Hanoi Rocks and the New York Dolls. When they kind of went back to their day jobs, Richard and Frank anyway, did you kind of wonder how the band was going to continue, if you were going to be able to get another lineup? You know, what was kind of the thought process after that?
Yeah, man. I mean, I had no idea what my next move was going to be. And just to clarify, like, it kind of was all staggered, you know, like it didn't all happen at once. Like, we're going back quite a few years now. So I think Sammy moved first, or Richard and I mean, there's no other way to say it, but we just kind of had, you know, the relationship was never awesome to begin with. And then everything just kind of came to an end one day. It was like, all right, I mean, I just had enough of trying to make it happen, make it work. And so that might happen. I don't know if that happened first and then Sammy moved away, or Sammy moved away and then that happened. And then about a year after that, you know, again, similar, you know, I was probably the closest with Frank by a long shot than the other couple of guys. But even that relationship, it just couldn't keep going. And it just was, you know, too one-sided. And so, to answer your question, I had no idea what I was going to do next. I brought in Alec Morton during that process. So I kind of knew that I could keep going with Alec and play shows and make recordings on bass. So that was kind of, I want to give you the full clear picture. It wasn't like all of a sudden everything fell out in one day. It was like, just like regular life. It was like staggered and complicated and, you know, one bad thing at a time. And then just trying to figure out how to be back together again. So yeah, I was completely, beside myself and really didn't know what to do, if I was going to do anything, you know.
Well, eventually you did kind of pick yourself back up and bring together various musicians to play on songs that were recorded over the next few years. How did you first hook up with Bumblefoot, another GNR alum? But how did he come into the picture?
Yeah, I mean, when the things went south with me and Fortus, I was just sitting there scratching my head, wondering, like, okay, who's in the New York area that, you know, most importantly, is with a phenomenal player, but then, you know, as kind of like a strategic move, like, you know, what's a marquee name that would make a guy like you want to talk to me? You know what I mean? Like, is there a local celeb hero that would, that could step in, you know? And so, you know, there's not too many of those guys around here. He's one, Earl Slick's another one who's also on the album. So, at that point I was still talking with Frank and I had met Bumblefoot a couple of times. It was very, very super brief. Nothing super memorable, I don't think, but I met him and I'd probably seen some interviews and read some interviews and he seemed like a personable, cool guy. And at that point we just tried, I brought him in 2016, late 2015, and we did three songs. We did covers of The Cure, and we covered Kiss, and we covered The Beatles. We did Fascination Street, Shock Me, and Revolution. And he was just real fun and cool to work with. And, you know, he was real good at turning on the shred switch when he when he needed to. And he was also, obviously, what was really surprising was that he also played, like, you know, classic rock guitar type stuff that was not, you know, anything that you would say was, you know, shredding or kind of over the top stuff that he's also known for. So it was real cool to see that he, you know, he could, he was a real song oriented guy, which is obviously the most important thing of all, you know?
And it, you also mentioned Earl Slick. He plays on a couple of tracks, Born on a Landfill, Dirtbag Blues, and Man with No Name. And I mean, I'm a huge Bowie freak, so Slick's a legend. I mean, what was it like? You know, at some point, did you ever step back and take a look and say, Earl Slick's playing my song?
You know, I mean, he was great. He came down. I got connected through him through Brian Delaney, who's also on the album, and Brian Brian was in the Dolls. I got through Brian from the Sammy Yoffus connection. So, you know, it's kind of like that song, one thing leads to another. And so from Delaney, I got to Slick, and then I mean, Earl came in. It was if memory serves me correctly, we worked together for one day. He did five songs, so I have two more Earl Slick songs that you haven't heard, and they're all of it is phenomenal. Obviously, it was awesome. I mean, there's actually a clip if you peruse the Compulsion's Instagram page. There's a clip of me, footage I filmed of him, Earl, playing Born on a Landfill, and he's just literally sitting right there next to me, to my right. I got the camera on him, and I'm pretty sure the take and the performance that's on the Facebook page, on the Instagram page, that's what's on the album. So yeah, it was like, you know, when you play with these guys, you know, and all of them, and not just the famous guys, and right. But even I've worked with plenty of, you know, club level, local hero type dudes, and they're all great. And when you're sitting right next to them, I mean, it's like a fucking, you know, rock and roll concert happening right, you know, 6 inches away from you, you know what I mean? So it is quite phenomenal, but at the same time, we're working and we're making an album. And so, you know, you're just enjoying the fact that, you know, this song is coming out even better than you thought it was gonna, you know. So it is a cool pinch me moment, and it is kind of out of body experience when the songs are coming together and it's exceeding your expectations. So yeah, it's a lot of fun.
And you know, you mentioned how you still have a couple songs left with Earl that aren't on the record, and since the last record, you've had a couple of singles. You mentioned the covers with Bumblefoot. Are you always writing and recording, and then, you know, when you have enough, you'll put a record out, or, you know, is it
that's
coming
the
kind
way,
of spurts?
Yeah, that's the way it's been. I mean, is that I'm always writing and recording, but I have to say, you know, since the pandemic hit, people keep asking me, so you must be writing a whole lot right now. And to be honest with you, I think I accidentally wrote a song earlier this year. I wasn't trying to write a song, but... I have like a million song ideas of like stuff I want to do. Like I want to write a song about this, or I want to write a song, you know, that has this kind of song structure that it's like something that I know that, you know, I haven't tackled before. So I have like ideas for songs. I'm not actively like writing right now. I'm playing guitar a lot, which is, I guess, how the pandemic has affected me the most as a musician is I just have a lot more time to sit around with a guitar on my lap and figure out a bunch of stuff that I haven't had, you know, time to do all this time. So I've been playing a lot. As far as writing and recording, you know, I have such a backlog of stuff that needs to be finished off that and I'm really not motivated to write until I get that stuff kind of squared away, because then what happens is you have, you know, like I have about now, I have an album, at least an album and a half of material that needs to be finished. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you kind of do this, this kind of morbid thing creeps into you where it's like, you know, I just want to be alive long enough to finish this stuff off. So the more stuff you write, the less chance of that happening. So you're kind of like, you know what, maybe I should just like finish this stuff and, you know, and then think about writing some more stuff. But again, like I said, I accidentally wrote a song earlier this year. I think it might be a good song. I'm not sure yet, but that's where I'm at with the songwriting.
And when you do write, do you have like a certain style that you shoot for? Because with this record, and even though it's only 33 minutes, it travels a lot of ground. You know, I mean, from kind of that Stone stomp on Born on a Landfill to kind of the Motorhead speed of Dirtbag Blues. Band of Thieves,
yeah,
to me is, you know, Chinese Democracy era Guns. Do you have a style in mind when you're doing a song, or is it just wherever the song takes you?
That's a great question. It's kind of both. I do know that the one thread that carries through all of them, like no matter what the vibe is, like there's always like a throb and a pulse to every song that, you know, like it, which takes me back to my, you know, being such a huge Stumps fan and such a huge Keith Richards fan, that there's always like a groove. Everything has got like a heavy, cool, deep groove, whether it's a slow song or a fast song. Like, it's got a rock. But as far as like, you know, what the song is, I kind of do have in my mind, you know, and I may start walking away from this because I do feel like I've sort of proved my point at this point. But I have been deliberately trying to go down the checklist and be like, okay, there's the fast song, there's the slow song, there's the song in a minor key, or whatever it is, you know, or there's the wah-wah song, or whatever. Like, I have been deliberately making albums so where it's like, you can't pin it down, you can't pin me down and write it off. It's just like, oh, this is just, you know, straight up Stones retro rock, which I love, but that runs through everything. But I do look for opportunities to inject something unexpected into that mix here and there once in a while, so that I keep the listener on your toes as you're listening. Even through one song at a time, there's surprises and twists and turns. So you just add that up on every song throughout the album, and hopefully it's a roller coaster ride the very first time you hear it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you mentioned that the band has done quite a few covers, and, you know, that Stones and Guns N' Roses are huge influences, and they both naturally come out on this record. How did you settle on Dead Flowers and Dust and Bones, which are two of my favorites from each band, to cover for this record?
Yeah, well, that, you know, I could talk about the reasoning behind both those covers for a while, but one thing, this is going to sound terrible, but it was like, you know, I just needed a song. I just need to fill up the album or do something else with, because probably that's what it was. I had the band coming in because the way it traditionally works, not every song, but, you know, 9 out of 10 or 19 out of 20 songs, the way it works is, I'll make demos with me and with the producers, and on this record it was me and Ken Rich. I'll make a demo with him, and, you know, I'll go over to his studio with, like, you know, 3, 4, 5 song ideas that are like 80% to 90% worked out, and we'll make demos with acoustic guitar. He'll be on bass and a drum machine, and maybe we'll throw like a keyboard. He can play some keys or synthesizer or whatever, just to kind of like, so I can come home with some, or go home and have some demos to listen to. And then we bring in, this is what I'm trying to get to. We bring in, bass and drums to basically trace over, you know, what we did, with their playing and a real drum set, obviously. And you know, if I'm going to call up a bass player and a drummer to come into the studio, I'm going to give them at least 4 or 5 songs so we can make a day out of it, right? So it might have been that, like, I just need an idea. And I was like, you know what? Dead Flowers, easy song. We all know how to play it. It's 3 chords. You know, it might have just been like, let's just throw it down as kind of like filler, you know, to fill up the day and fill up an album, you know, when it came time to release it. So there was that, but there was also, you know, the challenge of, it's such a well-covered song, you know, like 8 million people have covered it, it seems like. And Some are better than others, but it's a real song to fuck up. I mean, it's such an easy fucking song,
right.
And it's a great song. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just such an elastic song, meaning, like, it could be interpreted so many ways. I mean, you could do it, and you could do it as a reggae. You could do it, like, more of a punk rock type mm-hmm. thing that we did. You could do it as, like, a stoned, you know, real slow, stone, junky, even more junked out version than the Stones did. I've heard all, everybody's done all those, you know. So it was the combination of, like, just it being real easy to learn and play and not much effort for the band. And I just had it in my head that also the lyrics to Dead Flowers, it's a real fuck you song. You know,
yeah,
and
sure.
the Stones do that. There's kind of two ways in my mind that you could do a fuck you song, which is go for the fuck you, which is, I think, what we did. Mm-hmm. But then you could do what they did, which is kind of like the opposite. Like, it's such mm-hmm. a nasty, bitter song, but they play it like kind of as like a country song, where if you almost, you're not listening to it, you might not even pick up on
right. You don't
how,
get where he's
how
going.
Bitter it is.
It.
Mm-hmm. Right, which is that's a totally another valid way to do songs mm-hmm. as well. So I think it was the idea that, like, I had a vision, you know, in my head for another interpretation of it, and I knew that we could just nail it. And that was also very much with the Dust and Bones cover was. It's such, the lyrics are so what's the word? They're just kind of like. I keep saying creepy. I don't know if creepy is the right word, but they are, the lyrics are yeah. kind of creepy and cryptic and it's kind of this sordid tale of you know, infidelity and stuff. And so they do it more like a, you know, they do like a almost like an Aerosmith rendition of it, you know, even though it's Guns N' Roses, but you know what I mean when I say that.
Right,
so
the style.
I was like, another take you could do on that song is you could do a slowed down, creepy Tom Waits, you know, type of approach, which is in my mind kind of what we did. Which, so the inspiration was that I just thought I could hear it another way in my head that I thought would be effective, you know, mm-hmm. with both those songs. And then even on Dust and Bones, a few years ago, I had asked a Facebook question, which was something like, you know, if you could recommend, you know, if you could suggest Compulsion to do a cover, what would it be? And there was a lot of suggestions. Two that stuck out was Dust and Bones, which I had actually was thinking about on my own. And I was like, okay, if somebody else is thinking it, it must be a good idea. And then the other one was a great song that I know that the Compulsions could nail was Swamp Snake by the Sensational Alex Harvey Band. If you don't know that song,
yeah.
you should check it out.
Mm-hmm.
It's an
great
amazing
band.
Song. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that song is just so sleazy and nasty. So those are the two ideas from the people on Facebook that stayed with me was Dust and Bones mm-hmm. and Swamp Snake. But I went for the Dust and Bones thing just because, you know, it just seemed like in both cases, there's such well-known and, like, beloved songs mm-hmm. by really, mm-hmm. you know, really passionate fan base that would, like, pretty much destroy you and kill you if you failed. So that challenge of being like, we could do this, you know, I got this. That challenge of, like, you know, of standing and delivering on that material for that those super cynical, jaded fan bases in all the best possible ways. That also turned me on, you know, the challenge.
Yeah. And now, I mean, naturally nobody's playing live anywhere for God knows how much longer, but
yeah.
do you see kind of a more solid lineup of the band getting together to play shows eventually and maybe do some touring for the new music?
I mean, that would be awesome. Obviously, I can't see that far ahead right now.
Mm-hmm.
And there was talk of it fell by the wayside. I think mostly the reason why it fell by the wayside was just because the virus just kept getting it's just getting mm-hmm. worse and worse.
Yeah.
But there was a promoter a few months ago, and he had this idea for a I'm not going to give away too many details mm-hmm. because it's his idea. He had an idea for a socially distanced concert series,
mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like the Cars. It wasn't the Cars, you know, watching from your car type of thing. He had a more novel, very cool approach, which I'm not even sure would work. But we were entertaining it with him. And it would have been, you know, I was in conversations with Bumble and Delaney and Alec. And we were talking about doing it. This was back in, like, August. And I think, you know, I haven't heard much about that idea since then. I don't think it wasn't just going to be us. He was going to do it with a bunch of bands. But I don't know if I don't even know if it's a wise decision to do such a thing right now. I mean, it just doesn't seem that way. So there was that. And ideally, I would love to do some more stuff with those guys. And if not, I was before the pandemic hit, like in January, February, I was actually putting together another band, you know, with a different name, and more or less the same direction of the Compulsions. But I think we would focus more on, like, it would be less shredding guitars, you know, and even though that's not the cornerstone of the Compulsion does by a long shot, it's just a small thing that we've been doing, especially recently with the addition of Bumble. But it would be like more of the bluesier, you know, aspect of the Compulsions, and less the AC/DC hard rock shredding guitar aspect of the Compulsions. So I was putting that together, and that was going to be a fun thing to play out with. So to answer your question, I think in a roundabout way, yeah, I love playing out. I just haven't really been able to do it that much because of the other commitments that the players have. And because of my frustration, I was like, all right, I'm just going to make another band. We're going to have our own material, which we already started recording, and we got pretty far before, you know, the shit hit the fan. Yeah. And we were gonna do our own stuff, and then we would do whatever Compulsions material was like appropriate and we felt like doing, you know. I love playing out, and I was taking steps towards that.
Nice. Well, I mean, definitely look forward to even the new project, hopefully getting off the ground, should all clear up one day. But we've been talking with Rob Carlisle. His band, The Compulsions, just put out a great new record called Ferocious. Highly recommend checking it out. And it's available everywhere now. And I know some physical copies on CD. It's available digitally everywhere. Rob, thanks so much for taking the time to do this. Really appreciate it. It's been great talking with you.
Yeah, Jeff, I'm thrilled that we made this happen. Yeah, awesome.
And get best of luck with the record. Keep me up to date on any new projects, and should this all ever clear up, we'll run into each other at a show sometime.
For sure, man. Yeah, that sounds great.
You got it. Thanks, Rob.
Well, thank you, Jeff.